you're listening to the Pitch Vision Cricket Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Welcome to another week of the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. As we approach the Christmas period, we're going to have a break for our cricket season, as it's the middle of the cricket season. Just interested, David, do you have a little break in your diet and all your other... Well, like, I know you're doing the vitamin D thing now. Mm. Do you have breaks over the Christmas over for those things?
Yes and no is the answer to that one. I do enjoy my Christmas. You know, I like Christmas cake and mince pie and turkey and roast potatoes and all the rest of the things that you get at Christmas. And I don't hold back on those things because, well, it's Christmas, isn't it? You've got to have a good Christmas. But also, I don't completely throw everything out the window as well, because you don't want to go completely crazy and just be stuffing chocolate in your mouth every waking hour. a lot gets drunk as well over the Christmas period, but you don't need to necessarily go completely mad. You can still enjoy yourself, but not go completely mad. So, yeah, I let things slide a bit, but I don't go completely crazy. I've now finished my 6-week run up to Christmas diet, for want of a better word. We don't want to use the word diet, but we'll say that. So I finished that. So I'm back to eating a bit more towards what I normally eat, which is still healthy, as you can imagine. But now it's just a bit more food, really. That's the main difference there. So I'll be posting some of the changes that I made on my training log on the training logs forum, which you can find at pitchvision.com. So have a look at that. The other thing I've started doing this week is I've gone from a general conditioning and general work capacity phase in my fitness training to a more strength focused phase. So I'm going back to the heavy weights. That's going to help as well over Christmas, lifting a few heavy weights to get the metabolism going. And the idea is 6 weeks of focusing very much on strength before moving to a slightly more cricket-specific power and speed phase next. So I'm going into the gym 3 times a week, and I'm going to be lifting heavy weights 3 times a week. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. And have you found any good results in all of your eating habits and gym work recently?
Yeah, my aim was to get my body fat percentage down quite low. I haven't got an accurate body fat percentage measuring device, so unfortunately I can't be sure of it, but judging by the weight on the scale, that's gone down, so I'm assuming that I've lost fat, because I've still been training throughout, so I'm assuming that I've lost fat but not muscle. So that was the idea, and that seems to have happened. So
yeah,
I'm happy with that, and I'm also feeling a lot fitter. So in terms of general overall capacity, I'm feeling fitter. So I mean, that's a hard, you can't measure that how you feel, really, can you? But it might be psychological for all I know, but it feels like a successful 6 weeks that I've had. Did you play on Saturday?
Yes, we did. After our bye, we played against the top team on the table. And we started off well, actually. We bowled them out for 120. And we thought, they can't be the top team. Until they started bowling, and they got us out for about 40-odd. We're pretty embarrassed. And yeah, I think we just got a bit complacent in the end.
40, did
you
say?
Yeah, that's right.
Goodness me. Oh, no. So, that all went horribly, didn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing. And this got fired up a bit in the end, actually, a few words exchanged. When, understandably, we weren't pleased with ourselves and we had to take it out on someone else.
Oh, dear. So who was to blame there, the batsmen or the bowlers?
I think we all had to play a part in it. Bowlers did a good job, but we could have done a better job. Plus, we should have held up the tail a bit better. I mean, our tail crumbled. Plus, the batsmen didn't really pull their weight either, so it was a team, sort of a team collective effort of our loss.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good sign that you said that, because you were worried last week about how everyone's in a bit of a, a clique. There's cliques forming in your side, and you're a bit worried about that.
Yeah.
One of the good signs is if you say to someone, whose fault was it? And rather than blaming individuals or groups, you say it's everyone's fault.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. So maybe the failure has brought the team a little bit closer together.
Yeah, I think that is one of the positives out of this. I mean, we've started feeling more like a team after the loss. We were talking more integrating between the two separate groups in the team, talking about what went wrong. And I think that's probably one of the positives. So could be a blessing in disguise.
Well, yeah, as long as you don't do that. And that doesn't, as long as that doesn't happen every week, you're going to be okay, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, we just have to keep our head up and try and improve from this. One of the guys in the team said, at least we got our worst performance in the season out of the way, which is sort of true. I mean, from this, we can learn.
You can learn. Okay, so what are you going to be working on? What things are you going to do to try and improve?
I think we're going to just try and improve on building an innings. That's what our captain spoke about this week.
Okay.
The batsmen, most of them, they started rashly and they didn't really play like they had responsibility in the team. So each player is going to have to try and work out how to build an innings or how to pull his weight in the team.
And that's sort of tactical awareness, really, is it? That's what you're talking about. You know what's going on in the game and bat accordingly, I suppose, is the way to break that down a bit further.
Yeah, that's right. It's the technical side as well as the mental side as well. We really need to toughen up and, you know, not get carried away with the situation as well.
What, when you see the top order collapsing, not panic?
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty hard when you think about it. I mean, it's easy to talk about, but for us tail-enders and lower-order batsmen, when the top order collapses, we think that there really is a top-class bowling attack. So when we walk out there, we expect to face like a Brett Lee or Dale Steyn or Flintoff or something. And it's just a mental thing that gets us down.
So you're giving the opposition more than they possibly are doing, and one thing leads to another, and suddenly you're spiraling that out of control.
Yeah, that's right. If you were in this situation, David, and you had to give the team sort of a crash course on how to improve or pick themselves up from the situation, what would you do?
Actually, that's something I've been thinking about recently. It's a bit difficult to pick up a team who aren't already sort of working well together. That's a difficult thing to do because one thing, adversity tends to split people up even more, although in your case, it seems to have brought people together, which is a good sign.
Yeah.
Probably the first thing I'd do is try and get the team working on some specific things where, you know, they can feel like they can start improving them straight away. So even if it's not directly related to the problem that you had. So I would say work on something really simple that's easy to improve, like fielding skills. You know, improve your team's fielding skills, because everyone gets lifted up by a good fielding performance. So if you improve your team's fielding skills, you know, catches are getting held and boundaries are being stopped, then I think that lifts the team.
Yeah.
And also running between the wickets. I think that's a really important thing that is very, very easy to do. You can start improving your running between the wickets with one or two training sessions, as we've talked about in previous shows. So if you can improve your team's running in between the wickets, you not only improve your ability to keep the scoreboard ticking over and keep the run rate going, but you're starting to build partnerships then, and there's nothing more demoralizing for a fielding side than seeing players taking singles almost at will. You know, you just drop and run and you make it to the other end and there's nothing anyone can do about it. I love doing that when I'm batting. I love doing that. I love pushing the ball to a fielder who was caught napping. You see him napping, you know, he's standing 5 yards too far back, and you just hit it, and you look, and you think, right, that's not going, the ball's not going anywhere, but I've got enough time to make a run here.
Yep.
You go, yes, and you make it to the other end, and then the captain, you hear the captain, oh, come on, we shouldn't be giving these away, come on, boys, and clapping his hands and shouting at them, and you think, I've done him.
Yeah,
and you suddenly have psychological momentum then, haven't you? So running between the wickets would be another thing. And also being very tactically aware. We've talked about building in innings and building partnerships and things like that. But just being very tactically aware so you know whenever you're in a certain situation how to get out of that particular situation. I mean, a lot of that comes with experience, of course. If your number eight batsman is the type of batsman who's never been in that situation before, or has rarely been in that situation, then it's hard then for them to be able to deal with that situation. But there's nothing wrong with the captain talking to the players who bat down the order and go, right, I've got a job for you to do. Whenever you're in, there's going to be times when we're in trouble, when we're 35 for six, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and I'm going to need you to do A, B, and C. And whatever that A, B, and C, it can vary from a different captain's opinions. But most captains are going to say something like, just stay there as long as you can. Don't worry about how good the bowling is or how many runs you're getting or anything like that. Just keep yourself in, and the longer you stay in, the easier the batting's going to get. And just general advice like that, it will increase tactical awareness and also increase a player's confidence in his job and what he needs to do. And we've talked about roles before, the importance of roles and how you have to be clear in your own mind what exactly your role is. So those are really simple things. You can do all those things in, you know, cover those all in 3 weeks. And suddenly in three training sessions, you're suddenly a much better side.
So you're saying the best way for a team to sort of pick themselves up is go back to basics and sort of keep things simple?
That is a good phrase to use, back to basics, keep things simple. But it's also a bit too general. I do like that phrase.
Okay.
But you've got to be careful about... It's very easy to say, oh, we must get back to basics. We must keep things simple. And that doesn't actually mean anything. It's just a cliche. Yes, we all do need to get back to basics. Yes, we do need to keep things simple. But what does that really mean for the opening batsman? What does it really mean for the opening bowler? What does it mean for the spinners? What does it mean for the lower order batsman? What does it mean for the wicketkeeper? What does it mean for each individual player in that side?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's just a cliche. It's just like, you know, be the ball. It doesn't mean anything in itself. You have to have the context of the job that you want to do. And that's where the practical training sessions come into it.
Okay, so we'll definitely try those out in our team this week and let you know how we went.
Yeah, please do. I don't know if your captain listens to this podcast. I hope he does.
Yeah, I don't think my captain does, but most of the team do. So they should take a few pointers and suggest a few things. Yeah.
In that case, hello to everybody in Kevin's team. What's the name of your team?
Wenty Leagues.
In B7. Great.
Yeah, Wenty Leagues B7. Yeah.
Well, hello to you. That's the first shout out I've ever done.
Okay, let's get right into the questions for this week.
Okay.
Welcome to the question section of the Pitch Vision Cricket Show. The first question is from Peter Flemmer, and he asks, "Hi Dave, this weekend my son played in a 50-over game, and he batted at number 8 in the under-14 league. Unfortunately, the top order collapsed. My son and I, before he went, decided that he would stay at the crease until the end, which he did. Unfortunately, the bottom order followed the top order. My son scored runs at a slower rate than normal due to the number of overs still left to play. This should not have mattered. The bowlers were getting frustrated and bowling wides to his team's benefit. Is it cricket when he gets challenged for his efforts by an armchair coach? Furthermore, the coach said to the number 7 and 8 batsmen that they had time. What would your comment be to the above situation? As a coach, what would you have told the young cricketers? His team lost 150-76. I think, David, that I was in a similar situation in the weekend, and what he was doing, he was looking after himself, because it would have been too late by then anyway. I mean, he was batting in the lower order, and he would have needed at least, I don't know, when he came in, he'd probably need about 80 runs to square things off and win the game, and that's a tall ask for lower order batsmen. And for the lower order batsmen, they hardly get any time to themselves in a game to actually bat themselves out and sort of get a bit of match practice. So I think that it should have been all right that he played for himself and sort of try and play himself in. What's your perspective on this?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We have to make a couple of assumptions, because it wasn't fully clear from the question what he meant. I think it sounded like it was a limited over type game where if you don't get the runs, you lose. There's no draws. So I think in terms of that, it's slightly different from your format where if you don't get the runs, it's a draw, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it's slightly different in that respect. The good thing is that he had a plan. He went out there with a plan in mind. He didn't just say to himself, oh, whatever, I'm just going to go out there and just do whatever comes into my head when I get out there. He actually said, thought to himself, okay, I'm going to use this for practice. There's no chance of me getting these runs. So rather than me throw my wicket away in a hopeless effort to get these runs, I would rather get some good middle batting practice in. So that's, I'd say that's a good thing to do. But my point of view is slightly different from yours, Kevin, in that I would always say, if it's in a limited over style game like that, I would always say go for the runs. Even if you don't get it, at least at least you can say, I've done my best. I got out trying, but then you can't expect, I'm a number eight batsman, you can't expect me to get those runs.
Okay.
So in that respect, I would slightly differ from you. I'd probably say to that player before he went out, look, we can still win this. Let's go for it. Let's see if you can do it. Do your best to do it. And if you get out doing it, that's no problem. Just play as freely as you can and try and get the runs. Because you've got to in a situation where you either get the runs or you lose.
Yeah.
But one of the big points there is that the coach didn't say anything to him. It was the parent who the chap who's emailing in is the parent. It was the parent who helped the boy decide what the best tactic was. Well, that is a big red flag to me. Well, A, why is the parent getting involved in what the player is doing during the match? That shouldn't really happen.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's a bit difficult for a coach if the parent is standing right there saying to his son, come on, son, this is what I want you to do. But really speaking, it's not up to the parent to make that decision. It's up to either the player, ideally the player, or if the player is not ready to make that kind of decision at the age of 13, he might not be ready to make that kind of decision, then it's up to the coach to make sure that the player knows exactly what to do. And whether the coach was like you, Kevin, and saying, don't worry about it, just go out there and just have a net, almost, or he's like me saying, go out there and try and win it, whichever one of the two opinions it is, he should have made that decision, the coach should have made that decision and told the player what he wanted him to do.
It's not that it's never okay for a parent to make a decision, even if the coach doesn't say anything.
That's a difficult thing because parents like to be involved in their children's sporting performance, and it is important for a young player to learn how to deal with these type of situations if they're going to be successful. And how are they going to learn if the coach isn't telling them? Well, the parent could tell them. The ideal situation is for that young player to be confident enough to be able to make his own decision, and then the parent and the coach just go with whatever decision that the young player in particular made. That's the ideal. In this case, whether he's being told what to do by the parent or the parent was helping him make his decision, the coach wasn't involved in that at all. And that's bad. The coach should be involved in that, even if the coach just says, what do you think is the best thing to do? And he says, well, I think I should, you know, just, I'm not going to get these runs, so I might as well just try and stay in till the end of the game. And the coach says, that's fine, that's your decision. But where it's all gone wrong, really, is that the coach has stood aside, waited for the player to make a decision, or the player's parent to make a decision, and then come in and go, well, that was the wrong decision, wasn't it? Well, you can't have it both ways. So you either get in there and help a player decide, or you make the decision for the player, which isn't ideal, but it's better, but you just don't do nothing. You always do something.
Yeah, okay. What about in a position where the batsman comes, like, say, for this case, the guy comes in at a really early stage. Say he came in at the 20th over and he has 30 overs to play. Mm. And sort of, he knows that they have no chance to win, but he also knows that if he stays in a little longer, tries to get sort of to the 40th over, he can get close to the score, if not try and win, but just play himself in and sort of get a bit of match practice. Is that all right? Or would you still think that he should try and go for it as soon as possible?
You have to be, we were talking about building in innings. If you have got a long time to bat, and 30 overs is a long time to bat, 20 overs is a long time to bat, 10 overs is quite a long time to bat. If you've got 10, 20, 30 overs to bat in, then yeah, build an innings, build it up slowly, learn how to play a longer innings. And one of the best ways to learn how to play a longer innings is to actually play a longer innings. So as long as you're still in the hunt, as long as the run rate isn't getting completely out of control, then yeah, play by all means, play yourself in. In terms of the actual tactics itself, there's several ways you go about it. I mean, he could have gone hell for leather right from the start and started smashing it from the start, or he could have gradually built up the pace until he was getting there, or he could have just stayed in for a little while and then, as he got closer to the end of the game, throwing the bat at it. There's lots of different ways you can do it. But really, my overall view of this is that it doesn't really matter what you decide, as long as you actually make the decision, which is what he did. He did that, which was a good thing.
I mean, there are really two angles to the story, but I think the main point you've highlighted, David, is that there should be two-way communication between the coach and the player, and nothing from a third party that would confuse the player. Or, I mean, the coach is really there to provide advice, help the player, and give tactical advice as well. So there shouldn't be any third-party advice, instructions, or anything that would confuse the player and help him not to play in the team's interests.
Yes, I agree. You can't go out to bat with your head full of lots of different ideas of what to do. You've got to have a tactic and then stick with whatever that tactic is. And if there's lots of people on the sidelines giving lots of different advice, then that usually doesn't help, especially when the advice is usually something like, whatever you do, don't get out. You know, something completely useless like that. Thanks for that great tip. So, the ideal situation is the player makes that decision themselves. And really, that's one of the big jobs of a coach when you're helping develop players, is you're helping develop players into people who can make decisions for themselves. They don't have to rely on the coach. They can come up with their own plans. And whether those plans work or not, it's almost irrelevant. Because you're just learning, because you're coming up with your own ideas and your own tactics, you're going to soon find out whether that works or not, because it'll be out in the middle whether it works or not.
Yeah.
So, the first thing is not lots of advice. And the second thing is, really, the coach's job is to offer as little advice as possible. If someone needs a lot of advice, then yes, you're going to give it to them. But you're long-term strategy over the course of a season or two seasons or however many seasons you're with those players is to gradually withdraw yourself from the decision-making process so it's the player alone who's doing it.
Yeah. If Shane Warne was listening to this, he'd reiterate on his argument of why do we need a coach at all?
Yeah, I mean, someone like Shane Warne, he doesn't really need a coach, does he? I mean, he knows everything about leg spin bowling that there is to know, pretty much. Somebody like Shane Warne, who was very much outspoken against Buchanan, wasn't he, about having him?
Yeah, that's right.
At that level, those players are all capable of making their own decisions. But if you look further down the line, I mean, you're looking at under 13, the coach has a much bigger role because the coach is trying to develop players, whereas at test level, they should be certainly fully developed first-class cricketers. They might need a little bit more in terms of going from the first class level to the test level. But someone like Shane Warne, he's got 600 test wickets. He doesn't need anyone to tell him what to do in situation A, and he doesn't need someone on his shoulder. He just needs to be left to get on with it and take lots more wickets.
Yeah. Alrighty, let's get on to our next question sent in by Nico. And he's had problems leg glancing or playing shots in the leg side, and he tends to get out in different ways. He hasn't sent us much information, but all we know is that he can't play the leg glance or any other flick shots from his legs, and he asks how he could improve this failure. I'm thinking, could it be a technical issue, like a stance issue or something, David?
It's pretty hard to say without video evidence, if you like, to see what's going on, especially as we don't know what kind of flick shots he's talking about against what type of bowling.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. Does he miss it every time? Does he miss one in five? Does he, you know, is he good against the spinners, bad against the seam? We don't know what's going on there. Usually with these things, it's one of two problems. It's either an issue of timing, or it's an issue of the setup into the shot, or what commentators call the shape of the shot. You might hear someone saying he's losing his shape. That really just means there's something wrong with the technique. That's what that losing his shape is, a shorthand way of saying there's something slightly wrong with the technique in that particular moment. So your technique's an important thing, and it starts really with the setup, you know, the stance, the back lift, and also the initial movement towards the ball. If we're talking about a front foot shot, or the initial movement back and across, if we're talking about the back foot flick off the legs. So a very common thing is that the head position is wrong. So if you either start, your head starts too far over in the first place, or you, when you go to play the shot, your head is too far across. So you're not able to get in line with the ball. Your weight is falling too far over. You end up falling over to the offside and you miss the ball because your head is still moving as you try and play the shot. So the first thing I would always look at with someone's missing the ball down the leg side is the head position. What's going on with the position of the head? Is it in a balanced position so the rest of his body can follow the head? Even if it's a back foot shot, the head is very important to leading the shot. So if the head's in the wrong place, then the whole rest of your body is going to be in the wrong place. So that would be the first thing I'd look at, what's going on with the head. And maybe he's planting his front foot across in the wrong place, and he's missing the ball altogether as it goes down the leg side. Now, if that's not happening, then it's a question of timing. And that is a bit more of a complicated one, because if he's technically doing it perfectly, but he's just whacking on the pad instead of him hitting it, they just miss timing it. Perhaps his bat's a bit heavy, perhaps his backswing is too high or too low.
Let's talk about the technical side, David. If he had to fix that, what would you suggest he should do to improve that or fix it?
If it's a technical issue where we're talking about his head position is in the wrong place, then the best thing he can do is to drill with some simple feeds, just to get used to the feel of playing the shot in the right way. So you'd have someone feed him a ball from a good length position, if you're talking about the back foot, or just short of a length. You have someone kneeling down and throwing the ball up from the ground, for example, for the flick off the legs, or maybe someone bouncing a tennis ball, something very simple, where you can just groove the shot and do it lots and lots of times until you get it right. Until it feels right and everything is in the right position. Then when you're doing it in a simple way like that, then move on to some throwdowns possibly, or a bowling machine. Someone who can accurately put the ball in the same place every time. What you don't want to do is go straight from grooving the shot with a tennis ball, say, to straight into the nets. Because you go into the nets, you could have anything. You could have short balls, could have full balls, you could have balls on the offside, balls on the leg side. It could go anywhere. Unless you've got the world's most incredible bowler who can somehow bowl exactly the right ball every time.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. So if that's not going to happen, then you're going to need to drill with either throwdowns or with a bowling machine. And then once you've done it with a bowling machine or throwdowns, then you can go into the net. And then you can experiment to see if that's started to work a little bit more better. A little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where a coach really comes into use, isn't it? I mean, a coach can throw down a batsman a few and watch his technique, watch his head position, and try and correct those little things so the batsman can create a foundation for the shot into his mind, so he gets that shot perfected.
Yeah, there's no other way to do it really apart from to have someone who knows what they're doing to watch you. The only way to get around that really would be if you had someone giving you throwdowns or feeds and you were videoing yourself, and then you did it a few times and you watched the video and then you saw what was going wrong and then you did it a few more times and then you went back to the video and did it like that.
Yeah.
But if you can get hold of a coach, even if it's just for one session, then
yeah,
that coach can make a big difference to your setup or your head position when you're playing the shot, and suddenly everything falls back into place.
What about the timing, David? Would he have to do the same things which you mentioned about improving his technique? Would he have to go through the throwdowns and bowling machine and all that jazz?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, if it's a timing issue, then it's even more of a reason to get the coach in, because a coach can see what's happening with the back lift and the initial setup and all the rest of it, because it might not be the shot itself. It might be that when the ball starts going down the leg side, he suddenly lifts the bat up a little bit higher. When the bat goes up a little bit higher, it takes a little bit longer to come back down again, for example. So he might be just mistiming it. So again, it's drills, it's lots of drills, it's getting the feel for the pace of the ball. The problem with drills is that the pace of the ball will be different to what you're getting out in the middle, unless you've got someone who can give you throwdowns at the same speed that you're having the problem at. That's where a bowling machine comes in handy as well. But again, it's difficult because bowling machines are few and far between. If you've got one or got access to one, then no problem. But there'll be plenty of people listening who won't have access to one at all. So you've got to compromise as much as you can and have throwdowns and just keep working on it, really. It really is a matter of getting the technique right. And then once you've got the technique right, just grooving it again and again and again until it feels right so you can do it in the middle.
So what would you suggest he does until he perfects the shot, David?
Well, the obvious thing to do is just cut it out together. If the ball's going down the leg side, then don't even try and play the shot. If it's really so bad that you can't play the shot, there's not really much point in playing the shot at all. If it's going down the leg side, why not just pad it away? You might even get a leg bye out of it, which is not the end of the world. And it would frustrate the bowler to see someone just padding anything on the leg side away. That would be pretty frustrating for a bowler. He wouldn't think, he hasn't hit me for four there. He would think, oh, what's that guy doing? Yeah. He's treating me with a bit of contempt here. He's just padding it away. That's really bad. So it's a bit of a psychological advantage to cut the shot out. There's still plenty of shots that you can play. You just wait for the half volley outside off stump, which you can crash away through the covers and look like a brilliant batsman. Or if you've got a good pull shot, wait for the long hop. If you're playing club cricket, you're going to get bad balls. I mean, you get bad balls at test level. So you're going to get plenty of bad balls. Just don't worry about the ones that you're missing out on because you haven't got that shot worked out yet. Just worry about the ones that you can hit.
So even the balls on the stumps, like drifting towards leg, he should either block it or pat it away.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think about the whole LBW situation. You don't want to be patting away balls that are straight because you'll be giving out LBW. But if it's going down the leg side, and there's no danger of an LBW, pad it away, or if it's straight, block it. You don't have to be like Tendulkar, working the ball off middle stump before. You know, not everybody's as powerful with the wrists and able to work straight balls like that. That's something that top cricketers have that many club cricketers don't have. So don't look at the top players and think, why can't I play that? Just think to yourself, well, that guy's somebody like Sachin Tendulkar is a genius. Don't worry too much if I can't play the same shot as him.
Let's move away from the questions a bit, David. I was going through the site over the week and I came across a new topic on the forums on post-workout meals. Would you care to tell us a little bit more about that, David?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that. Yeah, it's from Dhruv, who's mentioned that what he has after he does his training and what other people do as well. So It's quite an interesting one. What kind of stuff do you have when you've had a training session? What do you eat afterwards?
I usually have my gym sessions at lunch during work. So after that, I usually have there's a shop where we get lean chicken, so skinless chicken with rice, and that's what I usually have. And if I don't have that, if I have a salad or something, I have a protein shake to go along with that.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty good then. I mean, you're covering all your bases there, really. The research has shown that in the immediate window, if you like, the immediate time after you've done exercise, especially intense exercise, your body is in a state which wants to be refueled. It wants to get the energy back that you've expended on lifting weights or playing cricket or doing whatever it is that you've been doing. So if you've been doing very high intensity exercise, or you've been doing lower intensity exercise but for a long period, like say for example having a game of cricket, then it's a good idea to eat some within sort of an hour or two of finishing, eat some protein and some carbohydrates. So protein is chicken, beef, or a protein shake, something like that. And carbohydrates is stuff like pasta, rice, potatoes. We're talking about, just to make a distinction, we're talking about starchy carbohydrates here. And starchy carbohydrates are just sources of carbohydrate with quite a lot of starch in them. So potatoes, rice, oats, that kind of thing.
What's your view on post-workout shakes? Because I've heard a lot of people critique them and say, well, they're not really useful when you can get the natural source out of your rices and chickens, etc.
Well, they're convenient. That's one of the good things about those shakes or meals. You can get these, meal powdered meals with ratios of macronutrients, all kind of thing. They're handy because you can just sort of drink them and go. So in that respect, they're handy. But you've got to be very careful because some of them can be a very dubious quality of the nutrients that are in them. They can stack them full of things that you don't necessarily need, like a lot of fat. Now, there's nothing wrong with having fat after you've exercised, but really you want to minimize the amount of fat that you have and maximize the amount of protein and carbohydrate that you have, just as a general rule. So a lot of these meal replacements and things like that, they have a lot of fat in them to bulk them out and give them extra calories and things like that, which you don't really want ideally. So you've got to be careful on that front. But they are convenient. The other side is it is a powdered meal replacement or post-workout, sometimes they're called post-workout shakes, and that's never going to be as good as eating whole food. People don't get fit and strong on powders. They get fit and strong by eating lots of whole food, stuff that isn't processed, stuff that doesn't come in a packet. Rice is brilliant. It's natural. The whole grain rice is close to the type of rice that you'd get if you went to a paddy field and just picked a bit of rice out. So that's what you want. You want it to be as close to the actual food as you can get in the ideal situation, because that's what your body wants. Your body wants real nutrients. It doesn't want powders and potions and pills and things like that. There are certain exceptions, but in a generally speaking, if you've got a choice of a whole food option or a powdered option, always go for the whole food option. But that said, it's just convenient. I travel around quite a lot, and it's so convenient to be able to. I do make my own energy bars, and I use powdered protein to add some extra protein in, and I make them out of oats and some other bits. But I use powdered protein to give it a chocolatey flavour, and also to add some extra protein in there. And it's convenient because I can just keep them in the fridge or the freezer, and then when I'm travelling somewhere, I can just throw them in my bag and I can go. And I know I can have something to eat, which is healthier than going and having a cheese sandwich from the shop or whatever.
I know us cricketers aren't, well, we're not known for our cooking skills. Maybe some of us are like Matthew Hayden and all, but do we need to be the greatest cook to have a good post-workout meal, a good and effective post-workout meal?
You certainly don't. I mean, it helps if you are a good cook. and it helps if you've got time to cook. But a lot of people aren't good cooks, and a lot of people haven't got a lot of time to cook.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself a good cook. Yeah. I don't consider myself to have a lot of time to be able to cook, especially working full-time on Pitch Vision, as I am. But I can still find the time. You can still find the time. It might only be a few minutes to cook something. If you've got, you can have a few tricks, a few simple things that make it very easy. If you've got something like a George Foreman grill, you know, you can grill a chicken breast in 5 minutes. And then you can have a chicken breast with maybe a bit of salsa on top and have it with some rice, which you cooked on Sunday afternoon. You cooked a big pot of rice on Sunday afternoon and you stuck it in the fridge. And you just take a couple of scoops of that and, you know, you're away to go. And maybe you chop up a pepper to go with that or something, or some peas or something like that. And you've got a complete meal there, which is does everything that you need. And it's taking you 6 minutes, 5 minutes to cook the chicken breast and 1 minute to dish it all up. So you don't have to be the world's greatest cook to be able to do it. You just really need to know the tricks. And then once you know the tricks, then you can just knock things up in a short amount of time very easily. You don't need to be the next Jamie Oliver. You can just get straight into eating stuff that's good for you, that's whole food.
Yeah, so as long as we cover the main food groups, right, like the proteins, the carbohydrates, and leave out all the junk?
Leave out the junk, yeah. If it comes in a packet, don't eat it. That's rule number one, really.
Yep.
Especially, doubly so, if the packet claims that the food inside is healthy.
Yeah.
That usually is the least healthy of all packet food.
Yep.
So don't eat it if it comes in a shiny packet. Eat whole food and eat protein combined with carbohydrate.
Yeah.
Because protein, if you can just have carbohydrate on its own, but it's a bit bland.
Yeah.
Just have carbohydrate on its own. And it's been shown that if you add in protein, that gives you a better post-workout response than if you just have carbohydrate on its own.
Yeah.
So I know Dhruv mentioned he drinks chocolate milk, which is actually a good thing to do because it's got a good combination of proteins and carbohydrates within it, because it's got sugar in it for the flavouring, and the milk has got complete protein in it, so it's good in that way. But on the other hand, it is a processed thing, so if you can have a whole food meal instead, have a whole food meal instead. But if chocolate milk is an option and it's easy for you, then chocolate milk works pretty well too.
Yeah. Okay. Before we finish off, Dave, I do have a myth to bust or prove. A few of my mates, after their gym workout, they have a theory that anything you eat is burnt off quicker and doesn't really matter. So after their workouts, they eat the worst foods, like the KFCs, the McDonald's, or the foods that taste good but aren't the best for your body. And they say that it's not really going to matter because they just had a gym session and that'll just all go away. What's your view on that perspective?
They're right in the respect of that if you have a KFC immediately after you've trained, then all the energy from that KFC goes into your system to help you become stronger and faster, and if you want bigger biceps, give you bigger biceps.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So in that respect, yes. And the downside is something like a KFC is good because it's high in carbohydrate, it's high in protein, but it's also high in fat. You know, you've got the mayonnaise in there and you've got the, you know, it's cooked in oil and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So you're getting quite a lot of fat in with your which reduces the effectiveness of the meal.
Yeah.
Because really what you want to do is have as high an insulin spike as possible.
Yeah.
And if you have any fat, the more fat you have, the lower that insulin spike goes.
Yeah.
So you want to keep the fat back if you can. So that's why having a KFC isn't quite the perfect thing. But again, it's better than not having anything.
Yeah, that's right.
And the second thing is, it's not healthy. It's not good for you from a health point of view, because you're eating food which is, generally speaking, related to increases in poor health.
Yeah.
So your cardiovascular disease and general well-being. If you want to feel good, having a KFC is nice while you're eating it, but let's not pick on KFC. I'll give you an example, my own example. If I have a McDonald's, I have a McDonald's very occasionally. Mm-hmm. If I have a McDonald's, I love it when I'm eating. I really enjoy it when I'm eating it.
Yeah.
About an hour later, I just want to go to bed and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because I just crash. It's this big crash.
Yeah.
And that is what happens when you eat lots of white bread combined with lots of high calorie, high fat, high sugar items, which a McDonald's usually is. So you've got to be careful from a health point of view, because you're not doing yourself a lot of health.
Yep.
Good. There's not a lot of nutrients in there. Whereas if you have something like brown rice,
yep,
with lean chicken and a couple of servings of vegetables and then a banana afterwards,
yeah,
you're getting a very wide range of nutrients. So it's going to help you feel better. And if you're feeling better, you're going to be performing better.
Yeah, that's right.
And also you're going to be less likely to pick up injuries through inflammation and general sort of colds and coughs and things like that.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to fight those off more easily. So there's the long-term thing of, you know, what's it doing for your heart? Mm-hmm. What's it doing for your bones? What's it doing for your teeth? What's it doing for your eyes and your hair and everything else?
Yep.
And there's also the short-term thing of you're going to be able to fight off colds and flu and general sort of bad things a lot more easily if you eat healthily.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a bit, the answer is a bit of both, really. If you have no choice, mm-hmm, then have a McDonald's or a KFC or pizza or whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's better than having nothing. But if you have a little bit of time, even if it's 20 minutes, you know, when you get up in the morning, get up 20 minutes earlier and just cook yourself something a little bit healthier, which you can take with you and eat on the run.
Yeah.
Then that's going to be better for you in the long run. So strictly speaking, they are right and they're wrong.
I'd like to tell them they're wrong.
You can tell them they're wrong, but they're not completely wrong.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, that's all we've got time for today. Just a little wrap up of what we've gone through this podcast. We've covered how to improve your team's performance, four easy ways, as David put it. We've covered batting strategy and how parents and coaches should or should not influence their kids' thinking. And we've also gone through leg side shots and how to improve that, the timing and technique. And David went over the post-workout meals and good ideas and myths, etc. Thanks for listening. If you've got any questions, please email us at mycoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycoach@pitchvision.com. And we're also available on iTunes, so subscribe to us and have a good time. Thanks for listening, and from Australia, this is Kevin Sampath signing off.
And this is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.